Hello, I'm Edwin Lane, and welcome to Business Daily from the BBC. Coming up, the gig economy. Is it revolutionising the jobs market, or is it just a raw deal for a generation of young workers?
There's this myth out there that all these millennials and Generation Y, that they're all creating their own apps, starting their own businesses. These are just the excuses that some of the CEOs of these gig economy companies are coming up with to just justify what they do, which is basically exploit workers.
And confessions of a professional bridesmaid for hire.
I actually hate weddings. I think they're pretty extravagant and awful, and there's something that I don't fully enjoy, but I'm there strictly for the people. I say that I'm a personal assistant, an on-call therapist. I'm their honest opinion.
That's all coming up in Business Daily on the BBC World Service. What will the jobs market look like in 5, 10 or 20 years' time? If the latest wave of tech firms coming out of America's Silicon Valley are to be believed, the concept of the 9-to-5 job in a comfortable office with a reliable monthly salary is fast becoming a thing of the past in America and the rest of the developed world. Instead, we're all set to become freelance workers, marketing our skills to the highest bidder with a host of technology platforms to help us. Think ride-sharing service Uber, or spare room renters Airbnb from San Francisco, or Deliveroo, the delivery firm based in London. This is the so-called gig economy, getting paid by the job, perhaps from several employers in a single day. The company that best epitomises this trend is TaskRabbit, where anyone can hire almost anyone else to do almost anything, like DIY around the house or picking up their dry cleaning. Companies like this have faced criticism from those worried that this new freelance economy has little regard for workers' rights. Recently, I spoke to Leah Busk, the founder and executive chair of TaskRabbit.
Well, what we're really excited about TaskRabbit is we're really opening up a whole new labor market, a whole new opportunity for people to have a flexible way of making money. So as a client, you can come in and say, I need someone to help me, you know, lift and shift some heavy furniture, and you can look at profiles and you can choose who you want to work with based on price and availability and reputation as well.
One of the criticisms of gig economy companies is that they prioritize the customer experience over the experience of the workers. So your Uber drivers don't have the same rights as people who might work for a proper company. Workers are working as freelancers and they're at the whim of the customers. Is that a concern for you?
It is. It's something we've thought about from the very beginning and for a long time. And we're set up very differently at TaskRabbit in that we're the only marketplace, really, where taskers can set their own prices, set their own schedules. You know, they say who they want to work for, how much they want to get paid, and when the jobs are going to get done. This is about creating a platform for taskers to make money. It's about micro-entrepreneurship. It's about these taskers creating their own businesses on top of our technology. Taskers right now here in London can make upwards of £42,000 a year. So, you know, they're really starting to make a nice living wage. And we believe we'll see that continue to grow. In the U.S., we see taskers making upwards of $150,000 a year.
So these are people who aren't necessarily making a bit of money on the side on top of their normal jobs. This is becoming their main source of income.
More and more so, yes. We see about a top 10% of taskers doing this full time. They'll pick up 2 to 3 jobs a day. And, you know, we have others that want to remain more flexible, that may just want to pick up a job a week or only work on weekends. And so this has really offered a lot of people a way to sort of reinvent their lifestyles and their livelihood. And that's why I think it's become such a major trend, both in the US and the UK and globally, around the future of work.
So part of your business model allows taskers, those people who are doing work for other people on your sites, to set their prices. Doesn't that inevitably result in a race to the bottom? Customers want the cheapest price.
It actually has been working very much the opposite of that, because if TaskRabbit, the company, was in charge of setting prices, like so many other apps and companies do out there, we would have to compete with all these other companies setting prices around house cleaning and around moving help and around, you know, IKEA furniture assembly. But instead, we say, you know what? This is all market driven. Our taskers will set their own prices, their own hourly rates. And what we find happening is that clients will come on board. They'll look at profiles. They'll look at ratings and reviews. Our taskers that earn what we call elite status, which means that, you know, they've done hundreds of jobs on the site. They have positive ratings and reviews. They're able to command more money. So what we'll see happen is, you know, a new tasker might come in, might start a little bit lower on the hourly rate scale, but will work their way up and continue to increase their hourly rate until they find the right fit of the number of jobs coming in for them personally and the amount of work that they want to do. So our average tasker right now is making about $35 an hour, which is five times the federal minimum wage in the U.S. So it's actually a quite healthy hourly rate and a healthy living.
Leah Busk there, the founder of TaskRabbit, one of the companies heavily invested in the gig economy. Another business seemingly benefiting from the move towards a freelance economy is New York-based WeWork. Founded in 2010, it rents out desk space to young freelancers and tech startups in its trendy offices in about 30 cities around the world. It seems to be working. Earlier this year, the company was valued at about $16 billion. Miguel McKelvey is one of its co-founders. In New York recently, I stopped by the original branch of WeWork to meet him.
What we found when we started WeWork was that there was an underserved community. There were a group of people that were looking for something about their lifestyle, about the way that they were working that hadn't quite been defined yet. It was during the time of great financial turmoil where there was a lot of question about career and stability and all of that. And so I think we helped people understand that looking for meaning in your life through your work was actually something very valuable and valid, and that you know, it was okay to work for yourself, to work for small companies, to look for passion in your job. And then there was another layer, which was really the empowerment that comes from being surrounded by people who are also on this journey. And so that's where the we came from. The idea of WeWork were that your life is richer when you're surrounded by people, that you have a greater likelihood of success when you have a stronger network. So it really is an idea that we are stronger together, that as a group, when you're open and interested in each other, you're all more likely to succeed.
WeWork's Miguel McKelvey. So if you're young, don't worry about job security or traditional workers' rights. Instead, you can build your own business on a platform like Leah Busk's TaskRabbit and supplement your income driving for Uber while renting out your spare room on Airbnb. And if you get a bit lonely, you can always rent out a space at your local WeWork. Sounds great, right? Well, some people aren't so sure. Stephen Hill is a senior fellow at the New American Foundation, a think tank, and the author of a book called Raw Deal, How the Uber Economy and Runaway Capitalism Are Screwing American Workers.
The one thing that I think Leah Busk and others don't realize about the type of work they're creating is that the quality of the jobs is really difficult on these workers. For example, if you're working on TaskRabbit, you basically are always hustling from gig to gig. You don't have regular employment. You're always looking for the next job. You're always having to hustle. And, you know, you might have a job now that lasts for a week, but you have to be lining up something that's going to come after that week is over. And it's extremely stressful for many of these workers. You know, there might be some types of workers that have the right entrepreneurial personality. They like to hustle. And for a period of time, you know, they make it work. But there's other types of workers out there who, you know, they don't have an entrepreneurial personality. Maybe they're extremely qualified, they're extremely talented and experienced, but they don't have the type of personality that is always out there selling. And these are the types of workers that are having a really hard time with these platforms. I mean, should everyone have to have that type of personality? The beauty of the post-World War II economy was that you had all these different types of workers, all these different types of personalities, and they could find their niche in the labor market. But this type of work is basically forcing on workers a way of work that many people just aren't suited for.
Some of the people behind these gig economy startups say that's what young people today want. They want flexibility. They want not as big a barrier between their working lives, their non-working lives, and the companies are giving them that opportunity.
Yeah, this is a complete red herring. I mean, every generation of young people since World War II, if you ask them, do you want a regular full-time job and do you care more about enjoying what you do or how much money you make, they'll say, oh, I just want, you know, casual labor and be able to do what I want and enjoy my life. That's what everyone thinks when they're in their 20s. But, I remember I was at this one event where there was someone said, look, there's a bunch of millennials in the room. Why don't we ask them? And so we did. And it was remarkable. As the millennials got older, the ones in the room, you know, they said, well, now I'm in my 30s and I'm starting to think I'd like to have a more stable job, thinking about maybe I want to settle down. My partner and I maybe want to have a baby. We want to buy a house. And so I need more stable work. There's nothing unusual about this. And so for people like Leia Busk and others who are making a big deal out of young people like this and are attracted to it, and you know they like starting their own businesses, it's just, I think, in some ways distorting reality. There's this myth out there that all these millennials and Generation Y, that they're all creating their own apps, starting their own businesses. Well, as a matter of fact, the percent of people under 30 who own private businesses has reached a 24-year low. And just as the wages of young people has reached a 25-year low. The idea that young people don't like to own their own things, they don't like to own their own car, this is ridiculous. They can't afford to own their own car. The wages are so low, most of them, you know, have had to find other means. I mean, many young people today are still living with their parents. I can't imagine that's their first choice, but they can't afford anything else. These are just the excuses that some of the CEOs of these gig economy companies are coming up with to just justify what they do, which is basically exploit workers.
Why do you think the rise in gig economy companies is leaving workers open to possible exploitation?
It's basically breaking the social connection between employer and employee. We're going to see more and more workers who are breaking with the old model. Either, you know, you have full-time work with a single employer for most of your career, or you're unemployed. More and more workers are in between these two poles. And the problem is that the way we have set up the safety net in the United States and labor laws and labor protections are not set up for this type of worker. And so this is really what's, in some ways, the biggest threat and the biggest change to the labor force, because of the way it allows this app and web-driven platforms to be used to hire and fire workers so much more easily.
Stephen Hill from the New America Foundation. You're listening to Business Daily on the BBC World Service. There are, of course, plenty of young people with the entrepreneurial spirit to spot a gap in the market and use technology to help them exploit it. One of those is Jen Glantz, who saw opportunity in the $300 billion wedding industry. The BBC's Sarah Trenor went to meet her in her makeshift office, a coffee shop in central New York.
My name is Jen Glantz. I am a professional bridesmaid and the founder of Bridesmaid for Hire, and we're currently at Argo Tea in Madison Square Park in New York City.
Which also doubles up as your office sometimes.
This definitely doubles as my office. I can be seen here for at least 8 hours on some days, especially weekends.
So you're a professional bridesmaid. This is not something I had ever heard of before. How did you come up with this idea?
It was a total accident. I was a poetry major in college. I was writing full-time at the time. All my friends got married at around age 23 to 25, and I was always the bridesmaid. One day in particular, two people asked me to be their bridesmaid, and it was weird because we weren't even close friends. So I came home, I vented to my roommate, and she said to me, "Wow, Jen, you're a professional bridesmaid." And these lights just went off in my head, and I thought to myself, could this be something that I get paid for? And could this be something that people need? I have no idea. So one Friday night, very lonely on a Friday night after a terrible bad date, I came home, I opened up my computer, I posted an ad on Craigslist.com offering my services to strangers as a bridesmaid for hire. I closed my computer. I didn't tell a soul that I wrote this ad. 2 days later, I checked my inbox, and there were hundreds of emails from women all around the world who wanted to know more. And I said to myself, we're going to make this a business. We don't know how to make this a business, but we're going to figure it out. And 2 years later, I've been successful at it, and there actually is a need for something like this.
Why do we need professional bridesmaids?
As everyone knows, weddings are extremely filled with chaos and stress and pressure, and oftentimes women don't have someone to stand beside them to help them through all of this chaos and this stress. So I think that brides need that support. They need someone to step in and do the dirty work so that they can have a great time with their best friends. People will tell you that being a bridesmaid feels often like a full-time job, and it is. It's a job that you don't get paid for, but you put in so many hours to do. I like to openly admit that I actually hate weddings. I think they're pretty extravagant and awful, and they're something that I don't fully enjoy, but I'm there strictly for the people.
So your role is also a therapist a little bit?
Oh yeah, I say that I'm a personal assistant, an on-call therapist. I'm their honest opinion. You know, oftentimes strangers feel as though they can open up better to strangers than they can their own friends. So brides come to me from everything from budget issues to family issues to last minute cold feet, and they expect a very honest opinion from me. So whether or not they like what I'm going to say, they're paying me to tell them the truth.
How do you feel now when you get wedding invites from your friends? Do you roll your eyes and think, no, I can't deal with another one?
I actually am thrilled when I'm just the wedding guest. It's kind of my off-duty time to enjoy weddings. You know, as a professional bridesmaid, I don't drink at weddings. I don't flirt with guys, mainly because I don't have any flirting skills. But it's, you know, a job to me, so I'm going there for my job. But when I'm in a wedding guest, I get to kind of sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Though I don't like weddings, I do like going to weddings, and I still cry at almost every wedding that I'm at. I just find them to be very emotional, and there's just a part of me.
And what's next? Are you going to have an army of professional bridesmaids?
So in the past 2 years, I've had over 9,000 women apply to work for me and become professional bridesmaids. So I have hired and trained about 5 of them who go to weddings with me or for me. I hope to continue expanding in that direction. I also introduce new packages all the time. My most recent ones are called How to Not Hate Your Wedding for a Bride and How to Not Hate Being a Bridesmaid for a Bridesmaid. They're online courses where I teach you how to get through that role and actually not feel so stressed out and not blow your budget on it. So really, I just want this position and this job and this company to be there to support multiple people in the wedding industry and in the wedding role, no matter if you're the bride or the bridesmaid, for years to come.
Bridesmaid for hire, Jen Glantz there. Well, tell us about your experiences of working in the gig economy. You can email us at world.business@bbc.co.uk or tweet us at @bbcworldbiz. That's it from Business Daily today. Join us tomorrow when Anu Anand will be here looking at the Chinese economy. And in the meantime, download our podcast via your favourite podcast provider.